Hello and welcome back to the Baltic Avenue of Podcasts, Baltic. Legends of Philadelphia. These are your hosts, Tony Top Hat Trove and Johnny Thimble Zito. I'm Brian Old Boot Bierman helping out on engineering duties. Of course I'm the boot. Obviously I want to be the top hat.
You don't have the alliteration for it.
Someday, baby.
You might be wondering, can we play Candyland instead? Well, in addition to being born and raised in Philadelphia, Trove and Zito have a lifestyle brand, South Fellini, that focuses on Philly culture and in-jokes and comfort and podcasts and luxury tax. Lots of times, customers will ask, where's this free parking I keep hearing about? Or they want to know why all of our money is pink and yellow. So we decided to start this podcast as an easy explainer for new Philadelphians and a refresher for the old heads. The city fascinates and excites us, so we're hoping to share that with you.
I knew you were going to take a shot at Baltic Avenue. But you know what? It's a house of the shore. It's a place at the shore. Better than playing under the plug.
They're Philly. The 1%. They're the 1%. Elon Musk lives there, dude.
Baltic Avenue is like the cheapest spot in Monopoly.
Yeah, it's one of the purple locations, one of the purple squares that only has two.
Oh, I thought it was a rich one.
No, that's not.
No, it's
I thought it was a blue
it's
one.
It's the cheapest.
What's
spot.
On the blue one?
Park Place and Boardwalk.
Boardwalk.
Yeah, Boardwalk. That's where Elon Musk lives.
That's where Elon Musk lives, on the boardwalk in Atlantic City.
Yeah, between a henna shop and a t-shirt shop. Yeah, he gets fudge every day at the
fudge. He eats fudge for every meal.
Yeah, at a different fudge shop on every day.
Good morning, Mr. Musk. Like on the boardwalk, feeding all the seagulls.
I don't know if people could tell from all of our Musk bashing, but this is an episode of Monopoly, a popular family board game that was invented by Charles Darrow, who first sold the game in local Philadelphia department stores. The Monopoly board is based on Atlantic City and New Jersey locations.
What's up with Philadelphia? People from Philadelphia go to Atlantic City.
No, Charles Darrow is from here. The point of the game is to buy a property, stay out of jail, and bankrupt your opponents. What started out as a socialist parable turned into a capitalist dream thanks to theft, repackaging, and Wanamaker's department store.
Right.
Oh, boy.
Right.
Yeah.
This is like how my t-shirt company and your t-shirt company were at each other, were trying to put each other out of business, and then...
And you combined.
And combined.
And then we put everybody else out of business. That's about it.
Everybody else out of business.
I love Monopoly. Do you guys play the game? You guys do Monopoly?
No. It takes too long.
It takes too long.
It's part of the fun.
I'm an only child, so I don't play any games. No, thank you.
Nothing but jacks for you.
Nothing but
just jacks.
Solitaire.
I got twosies. No, it's twice as long as it is fun.
It's like a game you need like a lot of people to play.
It's good with about four people.
But it's like even longer than.
I don't know.
It's too long. It's too long.
I love Monopoly. On Christmas, I played with my wife for 5 hours. She wanted to quit, but I wouldn't let her stop until she was absolutely destitute.
Until I broke her spirit, it wasn't. Christmas isn't over.
Christmas isn't over until someone cries.
Yeah, I know, right? You literally are Mr. Scrooge.
Mm-hmm. We have to work on Christmas. Mm-hmm. It actually wasn't Monopoly. It was a Philadelphia Monopoly knockoff called Philopoly, which is not a Philadelphia themed Monopoly, but a Monopoly themed or a Monopoly type game themed around Philadelphia.
So it's not Monopoly.
It's not Monopoly. We're going to get into the copyright stuff at the end of this episode, but
there's so many knockoffs. There's so many versions of it.
Yeah.
But it's like a Philly version.
This was called Philopoly,
Yeah, it, but it's like Philly humor and jokes and stuff.
Yeah, like you like the
I hate that shit.
Like the municipalities were cheesesteaks and pretzels.
Like yeah. Like, come on. It's so obvious. No one cares that you're from Philly.
Get
over it.
Get over it. Why even listen to a podcast about it? Why even wear a t-shirt about it? Why live in Philly? Why even work at South Fellini?
It's got a point, Beerman.
It's a good point.
This was a gift. This was a family member sent this gift. One of Leanne's out-of-state family members sent this gift, and they were like, hey, you guys live in Philadelphia? Here's a game I saw at a... I don't know.
What were the pieces?
The pieces were also pretzels and cheesesteaks and things like that. Foods. It was mostly foods. It wasn't very creative, and they just stole the rules from Monopoly.
We should make our own version of Monopoly.
I was thinking that. As I was saying it, as I was like saying theirs was not very creative, I was thinking we should just do our own.
We could do a mediocre version of Monopoly.
Philadelphiopoly. So you guys are not big on Monopoly. You guys did not play this growing up. Your family did not gather around to do this.
I'm just not big on any games, so it's nothing personal.
Monopoly was big in my family. We'd play it a lot, especially when we had the cousins over. And this was a game where people were at each other's throats. This is a game that gets under people's skin. And I still have grudges from playing Monopoly as a kid with family members and, you know, losing it all or bankrupting them, you know, whatever it took to win. It is a game that celebrates capitalism. We're going to find that there's a lot of lying and cheating, not only in Monopoly, but in the history of Monopoly. I was surprised to learn some of this stuff because what I know of Monopoly's history comes from the Game Box, which says that Darrow invented the game while living in Philadelphia, and he named all of the squares.
The Monopoly Man, whatever the Monopoly Man told you.
Whatever the Monopoly Man told me on the back of the box, right. And he said it says on the back of the box that Darrow invented the game in Philadelphia, and he named all of the squares after... his favorite vacation town in Atlantic City, which is like kind of the truth, but there's a much longer story that gets us to that point. So Darrow's game is generally considered a successor to one invented by Elizabeth Maggie, a typist at the Dead Letter office in Washington, D.C., and she patented it in 1903 when less than 1% of all patent applicants were female. So she's a trendsetter. Her game, known as the Landlord Game, came with two sets of rules intended to instruct players on the theories of anti-monopolist Henry George. He was an advocate for the wealthy to pay more taxes and more wealth equality. And in the first round, one winner economically crushed all other players. That's how you won round one. And in round two, all the players were rewarded when wealth was created. So whenever wealth was created in the game, like hotels were built or houses were built, everyone made money off of that. The whole community thrived off of that. And so that's round two. So round one, you trash your opponents. Round two, you all build up together. And it was intended to teach...
Build them back up.
Yeah, it was intended to teach these socialist values. Like, hey, kids, didn't that suck? You lost all your money. It sucks. Now you're destitute. You're poor. You're going to live on the streets.
Now team up.
Now, what happens if we team up? What happens if we control the labor? I think it was like a way to teach kids. I think the idea was we're going to indoctrinate all of these children into socialist values. This way, when they get old enough to vote, they're going to
indoctrinate.
Yeah. Well, the same thing is happening at the exact same time. The same thing is happening with the temperance movement. They're indoctrinating kids to be like, alcohol's bad. One drop of alcohol will make you blind. And so
that's
then.
That's true.
But that. Similarly, these Georgists are trying to get kids to hate landlords and despise the idea of rent and paying for life. And they have a whole philosophy attached to that, and it's wrapped up in this game.
It does sound like a good game.
It's called the Landlord Game, but it's really the game of life. They're trying to win the game of life.
Win of life.
But it's not life. That's a different game.
That's a different
that's
game.
That's a different game. That's trouble.
No, that's...
But that's a different...
No, sorry. Trouble is a different game.
Well, you're being so Parcheesy. Sorry, that's another game. Guess who?
Don't wake daddy.
No, you just stop. Don't break the ice. Stop.
Hungry hippos.
That caterpillar won.
The caterpillar won.
Jenga. The landlord's game was patented and some handmade boards were made in 1906 and they were released under the name The Economic Game. So when she first made it, it was called The Landlord's Game. And then when she mass produced it and she put some, you know, kits together to sell them, it was called The Economic Game. Catchy. Mm.
Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't sound fun. But I guess in 1902, this was like...
What else are you...
They had a different kind of fun.
This is cutting edge, dude.
This was like Avatar to them.
They used to play with like that little like ring with the stick. And he's like, yeah, roll it down the hill. Yeah, like, that was fun then, you know? Like, it's different.
That was like, that was like the hit thing.
Shortly after the game's formal publication, Scott Nearing, a professor at what was then known as the Wharton School of Finance and Commerce at the University of Pennsylvania, began using the game as a teaching tool in his classes. His students made their own boards and taught the game to others as well. So you didn't have to necessarily be in the School of Finance to have come across this game if you were at the University of Penn. You might have been taught it by a dorm mate or somebody in your fraternity or whatever.
I would say this is what they did, like, between stuffing themselves in phone booths or eating goldfish.
Yep.
Sorry. Old-timey college stuff.
A goldfish, drink, eating goldfish make you go blind, though.
Make you go blind, yeah.
Everybody was in a barbershop quartet back then. Everybody sang a cappella.
Or they were a male cheerleader with that cone.
Or they
were a male cheerleader. And a big letter.
It was different back then. It was different. It was different back then. George Bush was a male cheerleader.
He was great at it, I heard.
Reinvented the game. He was the first person. He was the first cheerleader to hold somebody on his shoulders. He was the first. The first one to do that.
He invented that, and that's how he became the president. Oh,
yeah. It's just that easy.
It's just that easy sometimes.
A student of Nearing, Rexford Guy Tugwell, continued to teach the landlord's game at Wharton years later. What a name.
There's no, no.
His name's Guy Tugwell.
Did his classmates make fun of him?
Nope.
This is
before masturbation was invented. They didn't.
All right, fine.
Nobody put it together.
His great great grandson's got it coming now.
Despite the limited commercial release of the game, it really proliferated on college campuses and by word of mouth. It was played in slightly variant homemade versions over the years by Quakers, Georgists, and Socialists. So I guess you went to school, you learned this at school, you came home, you taught your little brother, you taught your family at Christmas time or Thanksgiving or spring break, whenever, you know, you found your way back home from your studies. And then your little brother went and taught all of his friends or whatever. And part of the charm of the game is that you didn't have to go out and buy it. You made your own, board. So it was that simple, that easy to do. And
out of bark.
You just need paper to make the. Well, we'll get into that. It's coming up. Ruth Hoskins, a Quaker teaching at Earl Ham College, learned the game and took it back to Atlantic City. Hoskins made a new board with Atlantic City street names and railroads. A group member, Jesse Rayford, set the property values that are still in use to today. Ruth taught it to a group of local Quakers, and the game caught on.
Those Quakers are influencers.
Quakers are huge influencers. They have the best Instagrams.
I'll maybe delete this. Are they allowed to play games?
Yeah, they're not like...
What's their deal?
They're not Amish.
Amish people. Not Amish people.
They're Quakers. They're not... they're boring. They're not Luddites.
They're
boring. You just talked about how you love playing Monopoly, and they also love playing Monopoly, and they're like, oh, these... They're lame.
Zito plays high-risk Monopoly. It's different.
Yeah, Strip Monopoly.
Strip Monopoly.
But he's still all about, like, just, like, winning, though. Like, it's not erotic at all.
Yeah.
By the end of the game, I'm wearing everyone else's clothes. Yeah. I just have
one. Yeah, he showed up in a one-piece, and we're like, this guy's going to be a sucker.
I'm so good at it, right? Yeah, I show up just wearing boots, and by the end of the game... By the end of the game, I've taken everyone else's clothes.
He was a strip Monopoly shark.
Strip Monopoly shark.
He pretends like he's not good the first round.
Yeah. I lost my big Bud Press t-shirt to him. That son of a bitch. He got it all.
And I head into these underground tournaments super confident. And
underground tournaments.
Underground strip Monopoly tournaments.
You'll never get in. Don't look it up. You'll never get in.
I don't want to get in. I don't want to go.
High risk.
Low reward. It's really just bragging.
Low reward. Low reward.
The money's fake. The money's not real. It's
the money's fake. Only gross t-shirts. I have enough of them.
Yeah. So the greatest contribution of the Quakers to the game was to buy properties at their listed price rather than auctioning them, as the Quakers did not believe in auctions because they didn't like the noise of the auctioneering.
They didn't like the noise?
They didn't like all the shouting.
Like the guys is like, hey, fast
talking.
That's like, it's too much like speaking in tongues. They're like, no.
Yeah, it's the devil's. It's speaking in tongues.
Close to rock and roll music.
So there used to be an auction component to the game, and that's not part of it anymore. We don't do that. You just pay the listed price value.
They should bring that back. That's kind of cool.
Well, you know, you can add it to your homemade version.
What about trades?
Yeah, that's your house rules. You have to be like, hey, I want to buy Baltic Avenue.
I mean, I think it's an interesting component because you say you land on Baltic Avenue and you're going to buy it, then everyone gets a chance to, they auction it. You're like, I want to buy it. Well, it's an auction. So now it starts at $20, but it could be, is it worth $200 to you? How much is this little purple square worth to you?
No.
Sure. It's disgusting. I can see why the Quakers hated it.
Yeah. But it's definitely, it's part of the propaganda of being like, this is what it's like to buy a house. They list the price, much like today in the city. They list the price. You go, but you go in, and several people have made offers, and now you have to outdo each other so that one of you can get the property. And so it's more accurate. The auctioning is definitely more accurate to how it's done in real life.
You don't believe what people are paying this day and age for a row home.
Jesse's brother, Eugene Rayford, and his wife took a copy of the game with Atlantic City street names when they moved to Philadelphia. Due to the Rayfords' unfamiliarity with the streets and properties in Philadelphia, the Atlantic City-themed version was the one that they taught to neighbors Charles Todd and Esther Darrow, wife of Charles Darrow.
And it just catches on from there.
Yeah, so that's kind of how the Atlantic City codified as the names of the properties in Monopoly.
Do you think it's because like Philadelphians were like buying properties in Atlantic City?
Yes, like, I do think that is part of it. Yeah, I definitely think that's part of it, because it's also like the game is definitely selling a fantasy The version that Charles Darrow goes on to market now is like selling the fantasy of being rich and owning property in Atlantic City as a place that's like, you know, glitzy and glamorous at this time. And so I think that that is part of what makes it catch on in general. You're in Philadelphia, you're in New York, you know the street names in Atlantic City. If you can afford to buy a Parker Brothers board game, then you probably have vacationed at the Jersey Shore at some point in your life. Or aspire to, and so like that's part of you know the appeal of the game is that it takes place in this the game takes place somewhere glitzy right. And glamorous.
Hey, it took Philadelphians to make this take off.
Yes, well, it took a Philadelphian to make money off of it after learning the game.
Rip somebody off.
Yep, to bootleg
makes
it.
Sense.
After learning the game, Darrow saw the immediate potential. He stripped out the rules that taught the responsible social lessons about sharing wealth and replaced them with rules that encourage unbridled capitalism, and then began to distribute the game himself, retitled as Monopoly. So he got taught the economic game or the landlord game, whatever name it came to him as, and he was like, all this lesson stuff at the end's no fun. I just want to do the first half where you just wreck your opponents financially and steal everything from them. And he definitely saw the appeal in that. He saw why people would want to do that and live out that fantasy. And he was right. He definitely.
That's the best part of owning a business, I guess.
Crushing your competitors.
Yeah.
I think it's like particularly awful that he took this game that was designed to teach people, you know, social economic responsibility, and he was like, nope, survival of the fittest, greed is good, and that's the point of this game, and that's all there is to it. There's no redeeming value. He's like one of those people who watches like the first half of Scarface or Goodfellas and forgets how it ends. He doesn't want that part of it. He's like, nope, just the fun part, please.
Everybody loves Goodfellas.
That all worked out for those guys. Darrow initially made the sets of Monopoly game by hand with the help of his first son, William Darrow, and his wife. Their new sets retained Charles Todd's misspelling of Marvin Gardens and the renaming of the Shore Fast Line to the Short Line. This was probably just for... You know, he didn't actually know how to spell Marvin Gardens. There's no internet to look it up on. And the Short Line just takes up less space than Shore Fast Line. And it's just, you know, easier, catchier. Charles Darrow drew the designs with a drafting pen on round pieces of oilcloth. And then his son and his wife helped fill in the spaces with color and make the title deed cards and the chance cards and community chess cards. After the demand for the game increased, Darrow contacted a printing company, Patterson & White, which printed the designs of the property spaces on square carton boards. So the game playing surface was like an oilcloth, was like a round oilcloth, and the money was paper that you would make, and the title cards.
That sounds flammable.
Big time.
Darrow's game board designs included elements later made famous in the versions eventually produced by Parker Brothers, including black locomotives on the railroad spaces, the car on the free parking spot, and the red arrow for go. The faucet on Waterworks, the light bulb on the electric company, and the question
the
marks
best stuff.
On the chance spaces. Yeah, this is all his graphics. He added all of this. Though many of the actual icons were created by a graphic artist that Darrow hired. They were like his ideas. He packaged these games in flat white boxes and offered them for sale at John Wanamaker's department store, where they did well enough that the big game companies took notice. In early 1935, Parker Brothers heard about the game's excellent sales during the Christmas season of 1934 in Philadelphia and at FAO Schwartz in New York City.
It was still big here. It was so big here that like that was one of the reasons. Called on.
It was huge. It was huge in Philadelphia and in New York, and it was exclusive to Wanamaker's and FAO Schwartz. That's like where you got it in these two big cities. and Darrow was selling it himself. But if, you know, how could you, there's no way to find Darrow, you know, if you'd heard of Monopoly, you knew the only place to get it was Wanamaker's. You knew the only place to get it was FAO Schwartz, because he wasn't working for Parker Brothers at this point. He was just doing his own thing.
Should have got a website.
Yeah, he fucked up. A Squarespace.
MySpace page. It's way back, you know?
Parker Brothers bought Darrow's game, helped him take out patents on it, and purchased his remaining inventory. This is in 1935, after he had a great 1934 Christmas. Parker Brothers sets were the first to include die-cast metal tokens for playing pieces, initially using Battleship, Cannon, Clothes Iron, Shoe, Top Hat, and Thimble. The chance all cards hits. And community chess cards, all hits. The chance cards and community chess cards were illustrated with Rich Uncle Penny Bags by 1936. He's since been renamed Mr. Monopoly, but he started out as Rich Uncle Penny Bags. So none of that stuff is part of Landlord. None of that stuff is part of the economic game. All of that stuff is things that Darrow added on to the version of the game he was shown by Todd. And even that was, you know, pretty far removed from the original because, like I said, people play it in their homes. And, you know, we're talking about the game pieces now, and it's a cannon and a shoe and a top hat. But, like, the thimble is something that people actually would have used. They would have used a thimble, a button, a key, a coin, you know, to play the game while moving across the board. So these little trinkets were kind of, like, inspired by that. You're supposed to use, originally you used things from around your home, and this is, like, almost, again, just codifying it, making it, you know, here's the rules.
I didn't realize there was that was a DIY-ness to it.
Yeah. Monopoly sold 278,000 copies in its first year and almost 2 million the next. Increased leisure time and electric lighting had spurned the popularity of board games nationwide. So people finally were staying up later. Yeah. People were staying up later and playing more board games. A lot of chess. Damn.
A lot of chess.
That makes sense, though, right? I mean,
yeah, you can see now. That's crazy. That must have been crazy.
When it got dark out, you just sent your kids to bed. You know, you're not trying to play with fire.
It's,
but
it's 6:30. Go to bed.
Yeah, but now you got to kill a couple of hours with them because these electric lights.
Now you got to kill a couple of hours with your children.
Well, I'm saying this is a dicey time. This is between when you can just sit them in front of a TV and be like, here, watch some syndicated reruns until you fall asleep versus go to bed without any dinner.
Now I got to talk to you.
Here's a stick and a ring. Go roll it down that hill. Here's a toy.
And then when it's too dark out, you can't do that. So you send them right to bed.
Go to bed. Yeah.
They're like, why won't you light a candle? And you're like, look, what do I look like? I'm made of wax?
Made of wax?
I don't know. I'm not a parent. I don't know. I don't know, actually. I'm not a parent. I guess I'm speaking out of turn.
No, that sounds right. That sounds right.
Late in 1935, after Parker Brothers learned of the Landlord game, Darrow admitted that he had based his game on a homemade version of something similar. As a result, Darrow's royalty agreement was revised. He gave up worldwide rights, and in exchange, Parker Brothers would cover all legal costs that would be incurred from defending the rights of the game in court.
Oh, wow.
So they were like, we'll legally defend you against stealing this game if you give us all the worldwide distribution rights for this game and you don't get anything for it. He just didn't want to lose what he already had.
Wow.
Essentially they did. And then they were like, what else you got? And then they put him to work coming up with other games. So
what a deal. They're still making money off this damn game.
For real. Parker Brothers subsequently decided to buy out Elizabeth's 1924 patent for the original game and the copyrights of other commercial variants of the game. So by this point, other people like Darrow had tried to mass produce versions of the Landlord's game that they had turned into, you know, something different. You know, it had started from that but grew into its own thing. There was another game I looked up called Finance And that has similar rules, but it is not the same game. And it's not the same as Landlord, but it definitely, you know, they share the same kind of like moving around a board, collecting money, paying tax. There's chances, things like that. So I guess those key elements are wrapped up in the 1924 patent, which
they bought out.
They bought out. Elizabeth still held. They paid her $500 for it.
Damn.
Yeah, in 1936. Monopoly has become a worldwide bestseller with versions marketed in Russian, Cantonese, Italian, French, Portuguese, Spanish, and many more languages, with boards tailored to foreign locales. Neiman Marcus sold a chocolate version of the game for $600 in 1978.
What?
Wow.
Seems a little undervalued, right?
It was chocolate? It's
delicious.
It was a chocolate board, yeah. I couldn't find out if somebody ate it or if it still exists out there. So,
well, probably melted by now.
No, you can keep it in a refrigerator or something. If you wanted it because it was a work of art or something, it melted. I think somebody would have eaten it before it would have gotten melted.
It melted, then they licked it up.
Maybe. And that's inspired this the Kiss song, Lick It Up.
80s Kiss. 80s non-makeup Kiss.
Yep. Inspired
the,
by
the Hershey Kisses, not to be confused with, not to be confused with the heavy metal band
when they took their wrappers off.
An iPhone version of the game debuted in 2008, and an interesting note, during World War II, the British Intelligence Service secreted money, maps, and metal escape instruments inside Monopoly games sent to prisoners of war in Germany and Japan.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Starting in 1974, Parker Brothers attempted to suppress publication of a game called Anti-Monopoly, designed by San Francisco State University economics professor Ralph Anspach.
That's like a pasta, right?
What's that?
That's like a pasta, right?
Yeah, Anspach.
No.
Anti-monopoly?
Anti-monopoly.
Like anti-pasta?
Like an anti-pasta?
We're cutting this.
No, leave it. Let them know.
Anti-pasta isn't pasta. That's what
just
threw me off.
Just move on, please.
So this professor from San Francisco State University began to research the game's history, and he argued that the copyrights and trademarks held by Parker Brothers should be nullified as the game came out of the public domain. By 1974, the original 1924 trademark or copyright or patent, whatever, had already lapsed. So all of this belonged in the public domain was this professor's point. I love the public domain. People defending the public domain is what I'm all about. So this guy taking it to court and putting his money where his mouth is awesome. I think that's what's up. In December 1979, the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals ruled in favor of Professor Anspach with an opinion that agreed with the facts about the game's history. This had the effect of negating Parker's monopoly trademarks. They no longer had a monopoly on Monopoly. With the trademark nullified, the name Monopoly entered into the public domain, where the naming of games was concerned, and a glut of non-Parker Brothers variants were published. Parker Brothers and other firms lobbied the United States Congress and obtained a revision of the trademark laws in 1985, and Monopoly became a valid trademark of the Parker Brothers once again.
Once again.
I'm glad the government had to get involved.
They changed the rules.
In 1985. There's nothing else going on. They figured it out.
This is like important stuff. I'm going to nerd out for a second. I'm like really into the public domain. And these rule changes did things like kicking down the curb the copyrights on Superman and Mickey Mouse and things like that. And it really disrupted what belongs or what it would end up in the public domain. And these stories, these ideas, these franchises got an extra 20 years in the hands of these big corporations, because of these rule changes. And now, just now, the public domain, things falling into the public domain has come back. The law has lapsed. And I think 2019 or 2020, now things that are as old as they're supposed to be will fall into the public domain. Things from 1924 are now falling into the public domain.
Like Winnie the Pooh.
Or 1934, excuse me. I think it's 1934. Yeah, so things like Winnie the Pooh now are falling into the public domain where they belong. And now anyone can make their own Pooh Bear. You just can't put your Pooh Bear in a red shirt without pants. You got to put pants on your Pooh Bear, which I think is good advice for anybody.
It's not the same. It's not the same.
How come no one ever calls him Winnie?
That's a great question.
Thank you.
Named after Winnipeg.
Well, that poutine.
Maybe that's where the poo part comes from. Winnipeg poutine.
Poutine. Now I get it. Can we make money off that somehow?
Poutine. Yeah, our version of Winnie the Pooh is about a bear from Winnipeg who sells poutine. And Disney can't do a fucking thing about it.
I was thinking we make like a food. Poutine.
No, the money's in the merchandising. The money's not in the food. The money's in the merch.
The money's in food.
I'm a bearman. Let's get some poutine.
This is the... We just did an episode where we talked to... We've been talking about poutine a lot on this show.
Well, it's fried. It's got meat. It's got cheese. So it's going to give me heartburn.
South Philly, show us your poutine.
Show us your poutine.
That sounds nasty.
How do you do it? How do you do it, South Philly?
Okay, everyone needs to spice it up a little. Try it. Just try it. Like,
put
our,
some
our friends up
on
north
there.
In Canada. Let's give it a shot. You might
our
like
friends
it.
Up north in Kensington. So Parker Brothers got back the rights to the name Monopoly. But they did not get back exclusive ownership of the rules of Monopoly. So you can bootleg Monopoly rules and game, like the idea of moving game pieces around a square and buying up properties, but you cannot have the names and graphic design from Monopoly. So you can't take the colored squares, you can't take the Monopoly man, you can't take the word Monopoly. They have all of this stuff trademarked.
Gotcha. Gotcha. The hotels. Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Their imagery is perfect. And it's so, I don't know, what's the style of that?
1930s robber baron. It's like, it's definitely like it's like of the Gilded Age.
Yeah, right.
I think like the true crazy part of Monopoly is like, we're like, oh, it's a family game. It's boring. It takes forever to play or whatever. But it's like a revolutionary idea about socialism. And then somebody commodifies that and they turn it into something that actually works for capitalism. And they sell a bunch of it and they cheat people out of their patents and their copyrights for these things and money that they're owed, all in the name of what this game is actually supposed to be the antithesis of, or teaching people to not exemplify. But it is what it is, and I kind of love that about it.
Like that book company got rich from selling communist manifestos.
Yes. Actually, it's a lot like that. So I guess the lesson is, no matter what your philosophy is, someone will find a way to turn it into a product and sell it back to you. No matter what your beliefs or ethics are, someone will turn that into a t-shirt or a necklace or a hat and sell it back to you. Or a board game.
Or a board game.
To commemorate the game's 50th anniversary in 1985, the company commissioned artist Lou Brooks to design and illustrate the main logo as a red street sign-like banner, as well as the character Rich Uncle Pennybags reaching out of the O. All items stamped with the Red Monopoly logo also feature the word brand in small print. And man, did they have a lot of versions of the Monopoly game.
Yeah, they have a lot. And I went through all of them. I played them all.
You went through all of them?
No.
You played them all.
I went through a lot of them. So
1,000 hours.
There's like fake Monopoly ones, but I only did I'm only talking about official Parker Brothers Monopoly things. So
no Philopolies.
No. So there's Monopoly Millionaire, which is the first to make $1 million wins. There's all different electronic versions with, like, gadgets. There's card versions. I'm not even going to get into those. There's Monopoly Empire, which is the first to build a tower wins. There's Monopoly Cheaters Edition, where cheat cards recommend ways for you to cheat. And if you get away
with it. Steal from the bank.
Monopoly Pizza, whoever has the most pizza wins, just like in real life.
Just like real life.
There's Miss Monopoly, where female players earn more than men, not like real life. There's Monopoly Revolution, where the board is round.
Like the original oilcloths.
There's Monopoly Arcade Pac-Man Edition, where you play a round of Pac-Man on a shitty little arcade screen after pass and go.
Instead of collecting $200 or in addition to collecting $200?
I don't know.
Okay, it's that kind of list. I see.
There's Monopoly Singapore Then and Now Edition, which is two-sided, and each one is a different time period of Singapore history. And it comes with a calculator so you can do the inflation. I really like this one. There's Monopoly The Mega Edition, where the board is 30% bigger. There's Monopoly Giant Edition, where the board is 150% bigger. There's Inflatable Monopoly. There's Monopoly Longest Game Ever, where the board goes around twice. And then...
Oh, I've seen that. I thought that was a joke board. It goes. There's once, and then on the inside, there's a track. Yeah.
There's Monopoly for Millennials, where you can't afford property because you're a millennial. So you buy experiences, and you sleep on friends' couches, or you sleep in your parents' basement.
So you just get charged rent wherever you live.
I swear to God, that's for real.
It's not like a list that you came up with.
No, that's for real. These are all for real. And then, so these are the different. That's variations on the gameplay. But these are the different monopolies. So just gonna read a bunch of these. There's Monopoly.com Edition, Monopoly Sun Made Raisins Collector's Edition, Angry Birds Monopoly. Monopoly RIM 25th Anniversary Edition. RIM is the company that makes blackberries, so you can play as a blackberry.
Oh, it's got a collector's item piece. Limited edition blackberry.
There's Monopoly Heinz Ketchup Edition. Monopoly Unicorns versus Llamas.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
Monopoly Bass Fishing Edition.
That's good bass.
Monopoly Dog Lovers Edition. Monopoly Cat Lovers Edition. Monopoly Horse Lovers Edition.
Whoa.
Sign me up.
Monopoly FedEx. Monopoly UPS. Monopoly U.S. Stamps Edition.
Nice.
Monopoly Hewlett Packard Supply Chain Edition.
What?
Okay.
Monopoly BBK Clinical Research and Development Edition, only given out to attendees of the 2007 Drug Information Association Conference.
That's actually a really good one. I played that one.
It's fun. You learn about really pharmaceuticals.
It's just like regular Monopoly, but you all get high.
Off pills.
Off pills, yeah.
QVC Monopoly.
QVC Monopoly.
Sephora Monopoly. Juicy Couture Monopoly. There's Cthulhu Monopoly. Godzilla Monopoly. Monopoly Boy Scouts of America Edition. Three of the biggest monsters in the history of of Earth. There's Monopoly General Mills Collector's Edition, where you can play as the Hamburger Helper Hand or the Betty Crocker Spoon.
Oh, good pieces.
Oh, the hand is weird.
There's Monopoly Socialism Edition, which is an official parody that Parker Brothers made.
A parody.
There's no houses, hotels, railroads, utilities, or mortgages. You go around helping people using contribution chips. This is the quote on the game. Forget competition and individual glory in the pursuit of a socialist utopia. You know how much socialism monopoly costs on Amazon?
How much?
No, how much?
$69.95.
Wow.
For socialist monopoly.
That's rare.
Off Amazon.com.
Socialism isn't cheap. It sounds like that version of the game, Socialist Monopoly, is the part two of Elizabeth Maggie's original landlord game. Part two is you go around the board not paying rent and creating wealth that everyone shares.
Yeah, but this is to trick art school students into paying $70 for Monopoly. But that's nothing compared to the Monopoly 85th Anniversary Edition, which is $899.95. There's financing on Amazon for it. You can pay.
Wow.
You can get it financed.
Is that the thing I was talking about from, like, these being the magazines, the wooden one?
There's, like, the luxury ones and the glass edition and the wooden ones. But
right.
This is, like, bigger than all of them. The pieces are all gold, and it's, like, lined in gold. And this is all a quote from the Amazon thing. The board is embellished with over 2,000 Swarovski crystals, including the use of crystal fabric as a backdrop to the Monopoly logo. This eye-catching and innovative product consists of a carrier material that is completely covered by millions of tiny cut and round crystals. Let everyone who visits your house know that you are a douchebag with the Monopoly 85th Anniversary Edition.
Oh, 5 stars.
But that's not the most expensive one. The most expensive one is a original handmade Darrow game. He only made 5,000, the ones you were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
One of them went for $146,500 in 2011 to the Strong National Museum of Play in Rochester, New York. I assume they have it on display, because if they don't, that's just like a, I don't know, that's not a great investment.
Wow. Wow, that's interesting. There's a missing Darrow game. When he filed with the patent office, they have all of his paperwork.
Missing one?
There's a missing one. Yeah.
He was murdered, you're saying?
He was murdered
and someone took one?
By his own game. He was murdered, and that was the inspiration for Clue.
He was murdered with the boot. They found a little boot inside of him.
Yep, at Marvin Gardens. He had to, when he filed his patent after he sold the game to Parker Brothers and they were helping him get his patent, he had to submit a version of the game to the patent office. And then during the court case that was about his about Parker Brothers holding the copyright or whether the patents had lapsed, they went to go look up the original patent and they found the paperwork, but the game was missing. You have to submit like a working version of the game to the patent office, and it wasn't there. It wasn't like in the box where it was supposed to be. So someone had already stolen it by 1974.
It's haunted, you're saying? And that one's haunted?
And that one's haunted. That one's haunted by the ghost of Uncle Pennybags.
He's rich, though. He gives you $50.
That's a good ghost to have in your, to have haunting your mansion.
Oh, real quick, on eBay, the most expensive cop version of Monopoly looks like there's a Pokemon version from 2001 that's going for like $44,000.
Why?
Damn.
Pokemon just brings it out, people. It's a couple, couple of Pokemons are up there. I guess,
is something
like the top
wrong in it?
There's a 1930 deluxe first edition of Monopoly going for $12,000. And there's a bunch of, like, there's like also like Donald Trump Monopoly, I guess there would be. You go, everyone goes bankrupt.
Monopoly's most famous team up was with another Donald, McDonald. In the mid 80s, they started their first Monopoly game promotions, considered to be the company's most successful, which continued to the present day. In the 1990s, Jerome P. Jacobson chief security officer for the company that made the game pieces for McDonald's promotions, engineered a scam in which he sneaked into the airport men's room to avoid a woman auditor assigned to guard him, switched out winning pieces in the corporation's Monopoly game for regular ones, passed the winners on to friends and acquaintances, and in one case, Jude's Children's Hospital, netting a cool $24 million before the FBI finally caught up with him. His story made it to the HBO documentary, was made into the HBO documentary McMillions, which premiered in 2020. That is worth checking out if you you enjoy Monopoly content.
A great series about fraud and Monopoly and cheeseburgers.
And and McDonald's, a crossover of a lot of things that I'm interested in. I think if you haven't watched it, you should. Okay, that's all there is to know about Monopoly. Please check out our website, www.southfellini.com. That's SOUTHFELLINI.com for cool Philly-inspired merch. Check us out on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. We're at South Fellini everywhere. Follow along and join in the conversation. We want to hear from you. What's your favorite Monopoly piece to play with? What Monopoly piece would you add to the box? Look out for new episodes of the podcast every Monday. Stay safe, wash your hands, wear a mask, and the game doesn't end until someone's crying.
Oh.
Those are the rules to Monopoly. I didn't make the rules.
Wait, you made that rule? That's not in the rule thing.
Maybe that's a house rule. Yeah.